If everyone can take a seat. I think what we thought we'd do to start is because the presenters this morning just went in sequence with no break for questions. I thought we'd just have a 15-minute session now if anyone has burning questions they want to ask about the morning's presentations to those presenters or things they want to discuss that came up in those presentations. We could do that now, and then we'll move into the breakout group. Any questions?
I have a couple of questions for the two. A question for the couple of presentations that were about measurement of different initiatives, kind of in the action to implementation part. And the basic question is: for these measurement situations, we have kind of a little bit of incentive problem and recruitment problem. Of how you get people to be interested in this and to get involved. And to design the process itself, we usually need the user input. We can't design it in abstract for any measurement system when it needs to be designed upfront before they do the thing. So how do you deal with that? How do you get them involved? We had a little bit of conversation about it, but I'd like to hear a little bit more because I think that's very critical for making these happen. So.
I think the key word is partnership. And in a partnership, each group needs to have their needs met somehow. And so there is adaptation. There is there's not coercion. I guess that's basically what it is. That you want to come to some agreement, and it may require that you adapt to what community needs or school needs, whoever it is, are. But in general, if you can make the case that in order to answer the kinds of questions that you have, here are the best ways of going about it, that they're quite happy to listen. They may have suggestions for you as to how you can even make it better. It isn't the sort of situation where if you have a very rigid protocol in place that has to be done a particular way that you can really work with very well. So I think you have to go in with a more flexible mind, I guess.
So in our experience with Capture, we went in with the idea that we were not going to build it and they would come. We went in thinking that we were going to ask people what they needed and build it in that way. One of our initial experiences was we didn't want to tell them what we were thinking. We wanted them to tell us what they were thinking, and we didn't actually know how to ask the questions in a way in which we would actually get their thinking. Instead, we got, well, what the hell is this all about? And, you know, we didn't give them enough, in a sense, to get back what we needed. So that we've already learned that lesson, in a sense, the hard way. But in terms of actually building Capture, we see the building of it in a very iterative fashion, where we would begin to try to form pieces of it. We've already done some key informant interviews with practitioners and policymakers, but as we start to construct the pieces of the puzzle, we will be working with practitioners who we envision as our target user to make sure that it actually is usable as we kind of assemble it in an iterative fashion. So that's one part of the answer to your question. And then for example, we had our consultation. We were struggling to identify the right people to talk to, but as a result of the consultation that we had a couple of weeks ago, I'm now going on yet another trip before Christmas, which I'm getting flack for. But I'm going to Peel Region, for example, in Ontario, and meeting with the folks in public health there, and going to have a dialogue with them about, well, what do you need? And what aren't you able to do so that we can get a better understanding in that way to go there. So I absolutely agree you cannot do this as a build it and they will come. You have to engage them on the ground floor, and that's we're doing the best we can to do that, but we've certainly made mistakes already. So.
I have a question about the first presentation. It was the last slide. And the last sentence, it was saying that BMI is a weak measurement of obesity in India. I was wondering what type of evidence you come across to make such a claim.
Yes, BMI is not a very good in Indian subcontinent to measure those things, because our adiposity deposition, when people are doing DEXA studies and other, there are lots of papers, specifically Dr. Yagnik's group and Dr. Anup Mishra's group, they showed that our deposition of fat is different. And BMI never correlates with these phenotypes well in Indian subcontinent, specifically North India and South India. But waist hip ratio, they are correlating well. So it's that phenomena of this phenotype, Indian phenotype, is different. There are lots of publication in this line. Also, I remember there was a picture in that there is a famous Lancet article where Dr. Yagnik, his height is 5 feet 6 inches, and one of his collaborators from Oxford, I forget his name also, that guy is 6 feet some inches, and they are pictured together, their BMI is same. So there was that interesting article in that Lancet, I remember also, that was that first time they showed that BMI is not the determinant. We will go for correlation in Indian subcontinent.
So it doesn't correlate
with diabetes phenotype, with obesity, this kind of thing. You need to have you will have to that adiposity mainly in Indian adiposity is different. If you go for subcutaneous adiposity or peripheral adiposity, I think Dr. Umesh Kapil can help me, because he's a physician directly related with that. I'm not a physician. So it is different. Dr. Kapil, that it is well known that Indian adiposity is a little different. BMI doesn't correlate with it.
Well, look, if you look at the BMI, it is not the best indicator, but it's the second best indicator for measurement of obesity. So we know there are limitations, and that's, I think, so that serves the point. And second thing, what Dr. Bhardwaj was mentioning, for same height, same weight, if you take an Indian or you take an European, the percentage body fat is much more in an Indian as compared to an European. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, well, let's move on and get into the reporting back by the breakout groups. The way that we think this is going to work is we're going to have one group at a time send a presenter up to the front here. And we're going to have 10 minutes of presentation by each group, followed by 10 minutes of discussion about what that group presented. Partway through, we'll take a break, and then after we've gone through all the individual subgroups, we'll have a more general discussion about fitting them together. So can I ask the biological group to come up first, the brain group? Why don't you come on up to the podium here? And so that there's a sort of visual backdrop, we're going to have some transcription going on behind you of what's being said. Ah, okay.
I'm kind of in your way, so I don't know. Okay, great. Maybe you do use the microphone for recording.
This one.
Can I sit down?
Yeah.
Okay. Is this on? Okay, good. Okay, so we had a terrific group, and I just want to acknowledge my co-chair, Caroline Davis, and we had an excellent group, terrific group that is listed here. And I'd also like to acknowledge Jennifer Brearley, who took the notes and put all this together. So basically, we came up with 10 biological variables, and we came up with 4 pathways, and these variables basically fit into those pathways, and I'll just tell you what the pathways were. One was motivational. Another one was stress modulation. Another one was energy expenditure. And another one was nutrition. So those were the 4 pathways. And there was another one which was both a variable as well as a pathway, and that was epigenetics. But that might lead to some further discussion. And we basically listed all these things according to data sources. We didn't really have time to discuss modeling techniques, but this is perhaps something the modelers can do separately. And we tried to put all these connections to other levels, but I don't think I'll have time to go into a discussion of all the different levels and so on. So let me just focus on the variables and the pathways, and then we can move into the other ones and some of the data sources. So we started off, epigenetics is a major variable that everybody agrees on, and there are many factors that that influence it. And the pathways was basically really all the pathways that I've listed, which was motivational, stress modulation, energy expenditure, nutrition, all of those pathways come into it depending on which epigenetic phenomenon you're looking at. And we couldn't identify a particular data source, but it was noted that the P3G program operated from the University of Montreal provides a route to identifying a number of data sources. Then we identify another biological variable as a range of different inflammatory markers, and we've talked about a number of these inflammatory markers. A number of the cohort studies are looking at inflammatory markers and so on. And again, the pathways can be a number of pathways, including stress modulation, energy expenditure, nutrition, and so on. And we felt that a good, there were a number of data sources that are possible, and we identified MAVEN as one of the key ones. Then there is serum folate levels, which seems to be a real issue in India, and the main pathway of that is nutrition. And any cohorts that look at pregnant women would be appropriate for that. And low folate level seems to be associated with obesity and so on. Then the next biological variable, and we had a bit of discussion on whether this was biology or not, but certainly it has biological implications, and that is physical activity, because that sets a number of biological functions in play, and it's variable. And the pathway was motivational, and many of the data source, many of the studies could incorporate this. Then there was the whole business of sensory perception, so smell, taste, and those sensory aspects of food. Obviously, advertisements, the media, all these things appeal to our sensations to eat. And again, motivational, self-control, all these kind of things are important. Then there is stress hormone levels, and we heard about cortisol levels, and there's a whole range of other physiological changes that occur as a result of stress. And again, motivational to reduce stress, and that's the pathway. Then there is all the different metabolic hormones. There's leptin, there's insulin, there's ghrelin. There's all these are biological variables. And again, the pathway is a variety of motivational processes to reduce weight or whatever the motivation is to eat less, whatever. Then there is the biology of adversity. Obviously, adverse life influences, including in utero and in early childhood, have a very strong influence in the development of epigenetic phenomenon. And so the pathways is really to, I think we've got here epigenetics, or however you deal with these epigenetic phenomenon, which is a subject for discussion. Then there is another variable is executive function. And psychologists know this terminology. The term that was also used in lieu of that was self-regulation. I mean, if you can't control yourself, then you're going to eat a lot. So I think the executive function is also described as the superego. So presumably that is a biological variable. Another one is emotion. And that is a emotion in response to a whole range of stimuli. You know, you pass your exam, you go and have a binge. You're so happy, or if you're so sad, you know. So emotion is important, and many factors influence it. So I don't think it's really. I think there are a lot of these can fit into many of the data sources that we've heard today. And presumably by, you know, they some thought can be given to what kind of modeling techniques might address those best. And we've made a list. We listed all the levels in by alphabet, with A, biological, B, psychobehavioral, all the way to macroeconomy, which is K. And we've added these letters under connections to other levels. And I won't bother to read those out right at this stage. So, any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
Without reading your entire list of interconnections, I'd be very interested to know if any struck you as that really jumped out at the group as particularly salient interconnections and potentially sources of collaboration that might be fruitful between levels.
Okay, so let's look at physical activity. And so obviously physical activity, the main connections were F, which is community, physical environment, and C, which is the family. So we listed our top two. If we look at sensory perception, which is, you know, smell and taste and all the rest of it, G and H stood out, which is agriculture and agri-food and the media. If we looked at stress hormones, levels, the leptins and all this kind of stuff, the thing that really stood out was, again, agriculture and agri-food. And there's a letter that I... Oh, sorry, all of them. What's written here is not agriculture and agri-food, but all the rest. Sorry about that. Then if we look at the... do you want me to go through all of them? But those were some of the ones... I mean, there were a number of links, and all of them had links. Some of them more than two, many of them more than two, but we've listed the key ones here, and there was quite a spread of the different ones that occurred.
Question is probably because of my ignorance about the domain. So I'm wondering if we had two, three different teams looking at the biological factors, would they come with a similar set of factors in the sense that how much overlap was with what different group members were coming? How would people in biological domain cut this space in terms of important variables? So as somebody who's trying to learn about these concepts, I'm just trying to see if these are kind of the key concepts that I should look in the literature, for example, for the main drivers?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what methodology we used, which didn't work. The methodology we used was to at least start asking each of the group members to identify their top three, and then we would make a list of those and then prioritize them. But the way the dynamic actually worked was a very collaborative one, so that when somebody mentioned a particular variable, it led to a detailed discussion, and then a consensus was reached. I don't know, Caroline, do you want to make any comments on that one?
No, I think you said it really
good. Oh, all right. Yeah, I don't know, Dr. Bhardwaj, do you have any comments on that?
It's very difficult that the question that it's a blind kind of study if you'll have to do to understand. But I think 60-70% will be overlap between groups. But I have a feel that some of the point will be constant, like epigenetic variation, inflammation. This will come with huge confidence.
Okay, good.
Great. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on to the next group. Thank you very much.